The question gnaws at me that night, and then again in the morning. It hangs in my thoughts all the days at the office, too. The weeks pass as we prep for the collection until it's just around the corner. The Friday evening of my third week here, Heath and I leave the office at the same time. It feels purposeful, yet it's mere chance. So, this is coincidental, walking home together, I say, as we hit the sidewalk outside our building.
Since we live in the same direction, that definitely applies, Heath says.
Along our walk, we pass a shop that sells some books, but mostly cards and socks, like the ones he gave me. I've seen it a few times before, but the socks didn't register till now. I point to the display. Oh, they have my socks, the ones you gave me.
I'll let you in on another secret. That's where I got them.
Heath waves at the man at the register.
Good evening, Nigel.
The man at the counter smirks, then swings his gaze to me and says,
Your new co-worker?
Rolling his eyes, Heath gives him a you cheeky bastard shrug, and we continue on. He knows we work together? I ask. Heath can't seem to erase his grin.
I might have mentioned you to him.
I'm all sorts of effervescent, learning that he talked about me to someone. What did you tell him? Heath lifts a brow.
Are you trying to get all of my secrets, Joe?
Is it a secret?
No, not to you at least.
He pauses as we reach the corner.
I didn't say much, except a few weeks ago I remarked that the woman I want is my new co-worker. But if I were to have said something, I would have said she's bright and kind and thoughtful. She's challenging and intelligent and beautiful. And I'm a little bit sad that I can't take her home tonight, but mostly I'm glad that she's in my life.
The tingles. Dear God, the tingles. They become the dancing fountains at the Bellagio. My whole body bursts with sunshine and happiness. It's Friday night. I don't want the evening to end. Do you want to get a bite to eat, like the other week? I ask, my nerves jumping. I want his yes so badly. I suspect I'll get it, but the power of my want for it is staggering.
We're very good at this coincidental dining, he says.
We could write a book about it.
There's a great Szechuan place near your flat.
It has our name on it, I bet. After we order, I ask about the book he was reading the day we went to the gardens. So, did the butler do it?
I'm not going to tell you.
He says, lifting his chin, taunting me. So you finished it?
I did. It was excellent.
Did it keep you up late?
Yes, and it's possible I might have absolutely no regard for bedtime when I'm reading a good book. And what about you and the tale of love I found you with?
I finished The Hazel Valentine a week ago. It was wonderful. I've moved on to a new story, the one I had at the bridge. A woman takes the wrong laptop at airport security, and when she returns it to the owner, they have a hot night together.
But he turns out to be her new coworker, and they're vying for the same post?
He asks, deadpan. Exactly. He lifts his glass, takes a sip of water. When he sets it down, his eyes are hungry, but not for food.
How does it end?
The question comes out almost desperate. That is a most excellent question, I say.
I guess we'll find out,
he replies, then taps his lip.
We should trade books.
I shoot him a curious look, intrigued by the suggestion. I've never met a man who wants to share books before. I trade books with TJ, but he's a writer.
You think I wouldn't want to read what you do?
Heath asks. I've never thought about it before. But now I can't let go of this delectable idea. So I'd give you mine and you'd give me yours?
That's how a book trade works,
he says dryly. Let's do it, I agree. I can't wait. There are so many things I can't wait for with him, like everything. Like every time we get together, like every moment. Just the two of us. We'll form the Coincidental Dining Judgment-Free Book Club.
Charter members, he says.
Soon the food comes, and we eat and talk.
How was your time with your father the other week? Was it hard?
I picture my dad at tea, his words about Andrea, about happiness, about pushing myself. Tense, I suppose. He wanted to give me work advice. He always does.
What sort of advice?
Try harder, work harder, be better, I say, then take a bite of my salad. Heath scoffs.
Doesn't he know how bloody hard you work?
He likes to light a fire under me. Heath shakes his head, perhaps frustrated, but his answer seems imbued with understanding.
Maybe it's his way of staying involved with you. Maybe he feels like it's the thing you have in common, so he won't let go of it. I'm not defending him, mind you, but maybe he's holding on to that.
I noodle on that for a minute. Heath might have something there. You could be right, especially since I don't talk to her at all.
Do you want to?
He asks carefully. The prospect should make me shudder. The thought of seeing Poppy has always felt traumatic, but maybe that's a vestigial reaction. I don't want to give her that sort of power in my life, so I take time to truly think on his question. At first, I didn't want to talk to her. She tried to call me a few times, and I avoided her. She sends me Christmas cards, but I don't know. I don't think I want to know her again. He gives a supportive smile.
Then don't. You don't need to invite people who've hurt you in the past into your present life.
Maybe the corollary to that is that I don't need to avoid them either. Maybe if I need to go to Chelsea, need to visit the street of her gallery, I shouldn't let the thought of seeing her stop me. I'll be fine. My father, though? I can't just erase him. He's my dad. But I don't want to linger on my father at this impromptu dinner. What about your parents? You said they live nearby?
Just outside of London.
And what do they do? Wait, are they librarians too? After he finishes the bite of chicken, he laughs, pointing at my smile.
You're never not going to pretend I'm a librarian, are you?
I shake my head, maintaining a very satisfied, close-lipped smile. You're just a sexy librarian to me. You're going to have to accept it. He leans a little closer, drops his voice to a smoky timbre.
I happily accept it. And no, they're not librarians. He's an illustrator, she's a copywriter.
Oh, everyone's so creative, I say.
They are. They're why I love art,
he adds. How so?
Huge museum fans. They used to take us all over Europe to visit them. I loved it growing up, never complained, always asked to see more. To go on trips to Barcelona, Vienna, Rome, and of course Paris, to check out every museum.
I sigh happily. The story warms my soul. You'd found your calling.
Found it in Paris, in the Musée d'Orsay to be exact.
I motion for him to keep going. More? Tell me more.
They took us there when I was 16, and I didn't want to leave. I spent the whole day. My brother is younger, by 9 years. He wanted to go to a park, so they took him to the Tuileries across the river, and I stayed with the Van Goghs and Monets, the Picassos and the Renoirs, wandering the galleries until the museum closed.
A love affair began, I say. He smiles.
Indeed, that was it. I knew I wanted to work in art.
And does your brother work in parks? I ask playfully. He laughs, shakes his head.
My brother's an actor. He's in a play now. And so it begins. It closes in a week.
My jaw drops as my smile ignites. I've heard great things about that play. Heath stops eating, fork in midair.
Do you want to see it?
Yes, I love the theater.
I had a feeling.
I'm so predictable, I joke.
Or maybe I already know you will.
It feels like he does. It feels, too, like he could know me better than anyone ever has. When he walks me home, we trade books, and the effort it takes not to invite him upstairs is monumental. We meet after work a few days later at a cafe in Neil's yard, an alley that opens into a courtyard not far from Heath's home. Time for our first book club. We settle into chairs at a sidewalk cafe, ordering wine for me, beer for him, then we set the paperbacks on the round iron table. When the drinks come, we talk about stories. I think for me, I really responded to the whole thrill of the new lover with the impossibility of it all. I tell him of the Hazel book.
Yes, I have to agree. Though sometimes I just wanted him to say, fuck the world and be with her,
he says, leaning back in his chair, taking a drink of his ale. Love the thought. Truly I do. But can anyone really do that?
It all comes down to the risks.
Those brown irises take on a thoughtful, faraway look. Is he thinking about the risks between us? Or are we just talking about books? My heart scampers and I hunt for the answer. What risks would I take to be with him? He taps the cover of Hazel's romance, an illustration of a man and woman embracing.
The night I met you, you thought I was going to make fun of this, he says.
I shrug. It's happened before. He rolls his eyes.
Who are these idiots?
It happens, I say, indignant at the memory. I went on a date with this guy in New York, and when he found out I'm a big reader, he said he liked that about me. But his messages would say, are you reading one of those romance novels? LOL.
Why did he think that was funny?
Heath asks, perplexed. Because he was a pretentious dick. People like that, if it's entertaining, it's beneath them.
Reading is like sex, I suppose.
That makes me sit up straighter, and I laugh. But I have to know. How so?
Who really cares if somebody likes it vanilla, or kinky, or hard, or with leather, or whips? Who cares if a boy likes a boy or a girl likes a girl? What does it matter? Why does everybody want to judge?
Unless it's Instagrammable photos at pink cafes, or gatherings, I tease. His lips crook into a grin.
There you go. Seems you know me so well.
Under the table, I tap his calf with the toe of my flat. I think I do.
You definitely do, he says.
But let's return to one thing you just said. I put on my best seductive purr. Is this your way of telling me you like whips and chains? He laughs huskily, then the laughter burns away when he shifts closer to me, his tone deep and smoky.
I am an open book in that regard. My likes are simple.
He drags the pad of his finger along the edge of his glass, slowly, seductively. So luxuriously that I'm mesmerized by the image of what his fingers can do.
I loved everything about our night together, and I want to taste you everywhere. Kiss every inch of your body, explore you, have you, make you feel incredible pleasure.
That's it. I've officially melted. A sparkler ignites in my body, then bursts into full-on fireworks. I want that, I whisper. His eyes stay locked with mine, darkening as he talks.
I do often wonder why we aren't tangled up together again. Every night, every morning, skin hot, lips eager, under the covers.
My mouth goes dry as my face flushes from the red-hot images he's painting for me.
But then I remember. And so I do my best to savor everything else with you.
Then he takes a drink of his beer, letting the charged moment dissipate. Reluctantly, I let it go too.
But let's go back to these boys who mocked reading. Was there anyone in New York for you who was special?
He asks, biting out the last word like there's sand in his mouth. Heath has some jealousy in him. That's appealing. I never expected I'd want an envious man, but I like it. No, I've never really had that deep, abiding kind of love, the kind you must have known. My throat tightens as I think of what he had and what he lost. I've just had little bits here and there. Heath reaches across the table for my hand, takes it, and presses a kiss to my knuckles.
You'll have it someday, and it'll be worth it.
His eyes latch with mine. I shudder, maybe from his gaze, maybe from his touch. Perhaps simply from the conversation. You loved her. Deeply. Passionately. I say, voice trembling. He simply nods. Somehow, this both thrills me and hurts me. Gently, he asks,
"Does that bother you?"
"No," I answer too quickly. It feels wrong to tell him the truth. Maybe it does bother me, his great love, only because I want his heart for mine. I want to hold it and protect it. He squeezes my hand, his eyes reading me perfectly.
"Don't lie to me, Joe. I don't lie to you."
His words are powerful, a bit demanding. They insist on truth. I have to answer honestly. "It shouldn't bother me, Heath. And in my head, it doesn't, because I'm glad you had the happiness. I think it would make me sadder, actually, if you'd said you were miserable before." As I say that, I realize how true it is. If he'd told me they were falling apart or they didn't get along, that would have been worse. I'm glad you had a great love like that.
"Me too. But do you know what else I'm glad of?"
he asks, holding my hand tighter, like he doesn't want to let me go. I feel like I'm having an out-of-body experience in this conversation with him, like it's veering so close to something impossibly risky, but I won't step away. I'm walking into this, eyes wide open. "What are you glad of?"
"That I'm here, right now, in this moment. That I met you. That we're..."
He stops, his lips hooking up in the hint of a grin, like the grin itself contains a secret.
"And that we're friends."
His tone is all vulnerability and true emotion as he whispers,
"I think you might be my favorite friend ever."
My God, it feels like he's saying he's falling for me. My heart thunders mercilessly. It's unforgiving in my chest, pounding away in a crazy rhythm of hope and impossibility and wishes. Is now the moment to take a chance? Is tonight for risks? I don't know.
"You're mine,"
I say softly. For a second, maybe more, his eyes float closed. He's so unbearably handsome like this, in the evening, here in his city, with the scar on his chin and his heart on his sleeve. He opens his eyes, but says nothing. It's my move. If I asked him to kiss me, I'm certain he would. If I asked him to make love to me, he'd sweep me in his arms and take me upstairs to his home, mere blocks away. And he would absolutely make love to me. Passionately. Again and again. I swallow roughly past the tight knot in my throat. "I should go soon, or I might throw myself at you."
"And you know what I would do if that happened,"
he says, confirming that, yes, the ball is in my court. I do. Too soon, I say goodnight and set off for my flat, fighting every urge to return to him, press my hands to his face, and kiss him so deeply we don't let go. I don't even look back.
Chapter 17. Heath. I'm a smart man. I know what's happening here, and the way to end it is simple. Stop seeing her. Stop pretending that we're just friends. Because there's nothing friendly about the way I feel for Joe Brennan. But then I'd be denying myself the thing that's made me happy again. The person. Her. When I'm with her, all the loneliness goes away. It simply vanishes. Poof. The ache for connection no longer pounds at me because it's fulfilled by her. The days roll by as we work together, as I catch little moments with her in the office, as we collaborate more closely on the collection, and as I show her the nooks and crannies of the city. On a Saturday, I take her to closing night of Jude's play, and we all grab a drink afterward. They get on like old mates, with Joe asking Jude about his return to New York next week. "I've got some work there, a few episodes on a TV show that shoots in the city, And word on the street is my cat misses me terribly, my brother says.
Your cat is all alone in New York.
He laughs. Vivi is taking care of her. She's our mum's best friend. She lives in Manhattan. Joe loves New York, I offer. She holds both hands over her heart.
I do. It's so wonderful. I'm jealous you'll be back there, Jude. Say hello to Central Park for me, she says. And thank you for the tickets. I swear, when you were there on stage, asking your friend if she was the one on the dating app after all, I was dying laughing. That's a gift, to make someone laugh like that.
Jude dips his head, his smile radiant. When he looks up, he nods at me. It's a gift to make someone smile like you've done for my brother. I groan quietly, but she sets a hand on my arm and rubs my biceps a little possessively.
He gives me a lot, too,
she says, then excuses herself for the ladies' room. When she's out of earshot, I give him a look. Do you want a knife so you can serve up my heart on a platter to her? One brow lifted, he locks eyes with me like a cat who won't lose a staring contest. No, but I think you should, Heath. My stomach twists. Should I? I feel like she already knows. Elbow on the bar, Jude parks his chin in his hand.
Have you said the words? The actual words?
It's like he bangs a gong. The clang vibrates my whole body, shakes my very bones. No.
Think about it. You're like a whole new man with her.
Am I? I wonder. Am I truly new? I certainly feel like I can be hurt again. I can lose again. I can ache again with her. She doesn't just fill an emptiness, though. She's not simply a solution to a problem. She's so much bigger, so much brighter than an answer to the pain. I feel something like joy with her. That fills my whole heart and spills over into the rest of me. All because of the lovely, big-hearted, kindred spirit of an American who walked into my life. The woman I no longer have the will to stay away from. When I walk her home, I ask her if she wants to see more of my London the next morning.
Do you have something in mind?
A photograph image flickers before me, along with a feeling. Maybe it's deja vu again, or maybe it's my imagination this time. But I am sure of this. I know what I want to show Joe. I do. A place I stumbled across a month ago. I felt like I'd discovered something no one else had found. Her blue eyes gleam with excitement.
Take me there.
The next morning, we make our way to the old church near St. Paul's, the one I came across more than a month ago, before she arrived and turned my lonely life upside down. Before she filled my days and nights with her questions, her hope, and her own vulnerable soul. Before she filled it with so many dangerous but wildly wonderful possibilities. As we walk down the alley, the déjà vu I experienced the night of the gallery returns like a force inside my body, a pulsing in my veins, the pounding of blood in my ears. As we near the little church, the sensation practically seizes me, takes my mind hostage. But it's not déjà vu after all. It's a stark realization of what's happening to me. After I took that photo the first time I was here, I pictured a moment unfolding. I imagined talking about this place, laughing about it, having a meal. I wanted to share the picture with someone, and now I found her, and I have that future right beside me. When we reach the ivy-covered stone, Joe's breath catches.
Oh, Heath, it's so gorgeous, and so very you,
she says, moving closer to me. I catch the faint scent of summer from her shampoo. My skin buzzes with electricity. My chest heats with longing. Do you think so?
It's completely you.
She turns away from the church to face me.
It's a little moody, a little bit hopeful, and it looks like it has a story it wants to tell,
she says, her voice like sunshine. And because it's old, I joke, trying to step away from the intensity. But she takes my hand and won't let me.
No, she shakes her head. It feels timeless.
It does. I love that about it, I say. She shudders out a breath at the word love, then whispers a hi. Hi, I say. One more small step, and her face is so close to mine. The air crackles. The risks no longer matter. The future is now, and I can't let it slip away from me. May I kiss you? A grin lights my soul as she answers,
You better. But I must warn you. If you do, it's not going to stop at kissing.
My entire body sings. I close the distance, hold her face, meet her gaze. It better not end. I'm not just talking about kissing. I'm talking about this unstoppable thing that's happening between us. I drop my lips to hers, and all the déjà vu ceases. This is all there is. This woman, her lips, our time. Chapter 18. Heath. The kiss starts slow and a little dreamy, like neither of us can believe our luck. It's a gentle exploration, a return to each other and that one night that unspooled into a month of longing. But kissing the woman you want rarely stays slow for long. Soon the kiss turns heated, bordering on urgent. It becomes a collision of lips and teeth and bodies. Yet even as our kiss turns frantic, my mind does not. As my lips sweep across hers, the most welcome calm floods my entire body. Our kiss is supposed to make you feel settled. Hers certainly does, and in a brand new way. A way that wraps around my heart and mind, making me feel like this is the answer to every question. This kiss, this touch, this woman who I've fallen in love with. That word. Love. It imprints on my brain. It blinks like a neon sign at night. I can feel it in every moment with Joe. I kiss her more deeply, telling her with the fusion of our lips what she means to me. As I mold my body to hers, she moans into my mouth. I want to capture the sound, replay it night after night. I can't get close enough to her. I push and press, and as I hold her face more tightly, we slam together, up against the ivy-strangled wall of the unnamed church. Joe grinds her thigh against my length, seeking, hunting me, like she wants all the things I want. She doesn't hold back in speaking her mind, and she doesn't hold back on telegraphing the needs of her body. This connection between us shows no signs of stopping, only intensifying. My hands cling more tightly because I don't want to lose her. I want to have her as much as I can, starting right now, no turning back. No matter the cost. Now, though, I'm not contemplating costs. I'm only thinking of where we are and how the hell to get to what's next. Because what's next is inevitable. I need to get out of here and take her to my home. Yet the prospect of ending this kiss is awful. I don't want to stop it for anything. And so, I don't. I take everything I've wanted for the last month, more of her soft lips, her decadent mouth. Our lips fuse together, hungry, heated, and just a little bit desperate. It's fantastic agony. Pleasure skates down my spine as my hands rope through her hair. Those silky tresses are curled around my fingers, where they belong. I hold her and kiss her, our tongues exploring, lips returning, bodies craving. Somehow, I find the will to break the kiss. I stare at her, drinking in the sight of her face. Her eyes shimmer with wild desire that I alone can satisfy. I brush tender, gentle kisses against her bruised mouth, licking the corner of her lips, kissing the edge of her smile, then whispering against her skin, Your place or mine, and that's not a pickup line. She laughs softly, her hand snaking around my waist, grabbing my ass, yanking me tighter against her.
You mean here and now up against the church isn't an option?
I run the backs of my knuckles down her cheek. For you, I would commit that sin.
But is it really a sin?
It will be a sin if I'm not making love to you in the next 30 minutes. Her eyes, those blue ones I adore, sparkle with mischief.
Whichever one is closer, Heath.
15 minutes later, I unlock the door to my building. The second we're inside, I can't even wait to get up the stairs. In the hallway, I tug her against me, and then we spin around so I can pin her against the wall. We're frenzied as we crash into each other once more. Her fingers rake through my hair. My hands glide down her body, cupping her breasts through her blouse, squeezing them. She wrenches away from me, her mouth parting, unleashing a deliriously sexy moan.
I need to be alone with you, right now.
I curl a hand around the back of her head, yank her against me. And naked.
Well, yes, that.
I let go of her, take her hand, and we walk up the first set of steps, then a second flight, then a third.
My God, how many flights do you have?
Too many at the moment, I tell her. But then we're at the door of my flat. I unlock it, swing it open, let her in, and close the door behind us. I scoop her up, carry her to the couch, and undress her in a rush. I can't even bother with her blouse. Just have to get this skirt up, these knickers off. She helps me along, kicking the scrap of white lace to the floor, then spreading her legs. She reaches for me, threads her hands in my hair, and I kneel between her glorious thighs. She arches her back, moaning, and my lips haven't even grazed her skin. I just can't stop staring at how gorgeous she is, how wet she is.
Beautiful,
I murmur. I could worship you.
Please,
she says.
Please touch me, Heath. I'll keep begging until you do.
With a grin, I turn my face, brush my stubbled jaw against the inside of her knee, press a tender kiss to her skin. You never have to beg me unless you want to. I will always give you what you want. She sighs, long and greedy, tugging at my hair.
Give me you. I need you,
she says, utterly desperate. I want to take my time, and I also want to devour her. These twin desires war in me as I pepper kisses along the inside of her leg, up her thigh, along her creamy skin, delighting in the taste of her, the smell of her. My senses ignite at every kiss. My mind swirls with heady desire. When I near her sweet center, she arches her hips, her hands scrabbling through my hair to bring me closer. Perhaps I do want to tease her, just to make it last. I'll get you there, I whisper against her skin, heading in the other direction, down the opposite leg, as her need goes to my head. My mind crackles as the potent reality sinks in. All these weeks of getting to know her, all these days with her, all these nights wanting her, they're colliding into this one perfect moment of desire, heat, and love. I can finally have the woman I love. In one swift move, I slide my hands under her arse and haul her against my mouth, pressing an open-mouthed caress right there where she wants me most. She tastes incredible, like dirty dreams and beautiful promises.
Oh, God!
She gasps, arching against my touch. I groan lasciviously against her hot, wet flesh, electrified as I'm kissing her like this. Lust flares down my spine as I kiss and lick, suck and flick. I taste her, listening to her moans and murmurs, reading her body, the way she writhes and moves. How her fingers clutch at my hair, how she holds on to me. I've wanted this so badly, wanted to consume her, to know her. Every second with her is both everything I've craved and somehow 10,000 times better. It's so much better than what's unfurled in my head as she rocks against me, muttering words, panting obscenities, then making everything clear.
I'm close, so close,
she gasps, like she's hanging on by a thread as she chases the knife's edge of desire. Need pulses through my body as I give her everything she wants, and everything I need too. This incomparable intimacy. One more sweep of my tongue, one more press of my lips, and she shudders, babbling incoherent bliss as she bucks against my mouth, clutches the back of my head, and pulls me against her as she crests with a delicious, sensual, oh. Her moans and groans don't stop. They're the most gorgeous song as they linger, the fading notes of satisfied sighs, of murmurs and gasps. Soft fingers play with my hair, and my beautiful woman's face registers only euphoria. Pride thrums in me. I did that. I made her feel that way. And I can't wait to do it again. I dust a kiss onto her inner thigh, then her hip. Then she reaches for my face, pulls me to her, and devours my lips. Well, she's as fearless in bed as she is out of it. Imagine that. This time she's the one to break the kiss. The look in her eyes is wanton and hungry. I part my lips to tell her that I'll get her there again, that I'll take her over the cliff once more. But before I can tell her all I want to do to her, she cups my cheeks in her soft hands and says, "I want to tell you something." I hope it's that she's on the pill, that we don't need a condom. That would be fantastic. "Tell me anything," I say. Her eyes stay with mine, her features go soft. "I'm in love with you." I both did and did not expect that. But now that she's said it, I'm half frustrated I didn't voice it first. But I'm all elated. I'm exhilarated by the feeling in my body. I want to wrap myself in those wonderful words and spend the night in them too. "I'm so in love with you, Joe. You must know that. Tell me you know that." My voice is desperate. No surprise. I want my feelings for her to be self-evident. "I would never assume. I just hoped, Heath," she says, running her thumb along my jaw reverently. Hope and bliss and wonder storm through me. "I've been falling for you since the night we met. I just can't stop." "Don't stop. I don't want you to stop falling in love." "I won't," I say, and scoop her into my arms, carry her to my bedroom. "This is your favorite way, isn't it? You like to carry me before you fuck me." She's not wrong. I love the feel of her in my arms. "Yes, makes you feel like mine."
"I am yours."
"You are." When I set her on the bed, she undoes the buttons on her blouse in a flurry as I shed my shirt. Her eagerness is a drug. This hit of it intoxicates me to another level, and I didn't think I could get any higher. But I do as I rake my gaze over her. She's wearing a white lace bra and nothing else. If I were a boudoir photographer, I'd take a photo of you right now. The glow on your face, the radiance of your skin, the blissed out look in your eyes. They tell the story of your Sunday morning, I say as I unbutton my jeans.
"And what is that tale, Heath?"
My clothes are off, and I climb over her, naked and ready. "That you're having a very good day." She laughs softly.
"Every day with you is a good one."
As I reach for her hands and lift them over her head, I brush my lips along her neck. "You're most definitely my favorite friend." I tease her with the words we use to dance around all these love confessions, saying it without saying it. Now we're free to voice everything, but she's the one who says the most beautiful words of all.
"I love you," she says again. "Also, I'm on protection, and I'm clean if you want to go without."
As I kiss the hollow of her throat, I groan, pleasure throbbing through me. "I do. I absolutely do."
"Good. I can't wait anymore,"
she says, then grips my shoulders and pushes me to my side as she removes her bra. I take the hint, rolling on my back.
"Come on top of me, love. Let me look at you."
She straddles me, her hair glossy, breasts full, skin glowing. Then she takes my aching length in her hand, making me shudder from her touch, making me rasp out her name as she brings me against her, rubbing, stroking, driving me wild and hungry. I growl, "Get on me now." My naughty lover grins, rises up, and then takes me, sliding down over my dick.
You feel so good,
I mutter.
Oh, God, yes, Heath,
she murmurs on a breathless pant. My fingers curl tight around her hips, my skin buzzing. Hell, my entire body tingles. Sensations rocket through me as I watch the woman I adore take me deep into her body, moving up and down, riding me as I drive into her. Jo is a feast for all my senses. My eyes can't get enough of her as they travel down her body, the sway of her breasts, the curves of her hips, the sheen of her skin. Most of all, the look in her eyes as she leans closer, sets her hands on my chest, and pins my gaze with hers. Her lips part, and a breathy, needy, oh, escapes them.
You're so worth waiting for,
she says, and it feels like we've been waiting the longest time. I know it's only been weeks, but it feels like so much longer. Maybe that's how it goes when you fall so hard, so deep, so far that you'll do nearly anything to keep her and make her happy. Because she makes me the happiest, and I want her to be very, very happy with me. So I slide my hand between her legs, rub my thumb against the delicious rise of her flesh, and stroke until she's shuddering, breaking apart beautifully, then collapsing onto me. Lust overtakes my senses, demanding release. I flip her over, hook her ankles on my shoulders, and drive back into her.
Yes, yes, yes,
she says, urging me on. I don't need the encouragement, but I do love it. I love it so much. My own orgasm takes hold, blotting out the world as I come with her like nothing else matters. It feels like nothing can touch you, not when you find this kind of love. Maybe fate's not fucking with us after all. Later, after we clean up, I bring her into my arms, kiss her face, and hold her close. Maybe I don't have to let her go. Maybe I won't.
Chapter 19. Jo. I expected a library. I tell Heath as much as I wander back into his living room a little later, buttoning up my blouse, pulling on my underwear. His home is small and clearly well-loved, but there's a glaring incongruity. I gesture to the cream wall in front of his couch. It's bare, where I'd expect a bookshelf bursting with tomes. Instead, his living room simply holds a mantle with several framed photos. I turn away from the photos, parking my hands on my hips. You're supposed to have floor-to-ceiling shelves with dog-eared paperbacks. He shudders.
Who would dog-ear their paperbacks?
I roll my eyes. Oh, please tell me you're not one of those people that considers dog-earing a paperback a crime. He points at me, all j'accuse.
Please tell me you're not one of those people who dog-ears a paperback.
Fine, I do, but it's a sign of love. It shows that a book is loved. He cringes.
I can hear the pages screaming. They're literally begging you. Don't hurt me, Jo. Don't fold me over.
He says, in a comical, high-pitched voice that is so not Heath that it cracks me up. I flop onto his slate-gray couch, patting the cushion next to me. He wears only boxer briefs, black ones that he looks good in, long and lanky and toned. But then he looks good in everything, and also in nothing. He joins me, and I run a hand along his arm. All right, we disagree on dog-earing. But tell me, why don't you have shelves and shelves of books? Wait, have you been tricking me into thinking you're a reader? Or perhaps you actually read on an ebook app? He scoffs, wraps me in his arms to tug me close, my head against his chest. He sighs happily into my hair, and the feel of his arms around me is so warm and welcoming. It feels like he doesn't want to let me go, and that's why I like it.
I don't have any books here because I don't keep them, for the most part.
I crane my neck, stare up at him inquisitively. What do you mean?
I donate nearly everything I read. I buy the book, and then I give it away. which is another reason why I don't dog-ear the pages, so others can have them and enjoy them.
My heart thumps. This man and his generosity. You can't say that.
Why can't I?
He asks with a chuckle. Because it makes me fall even harder for you. He holds me closer.
Then I'll tell you more fabulous things about me.
Like where you donate them?
He whispers, low and husky, in my ear. A library.
I shudder. Literally, a tremble rushes through my entire body. Okay, I love that you do that. And now it makes perfect sense why you don't have any books here. The fact that you donate them all is another incredibly hot thing on a long list of hot things that you do, Heath Graham.
What else is on that list? Hopefully, the way I fuck you, the way I kiss you, the way I lick and suck you.
He brings his lips to my ear, sweeps his tongue across my earlobe, finishing with a delicious nip. I shiver, all hot and bothered. Are you trying to get me turned on again?
Consider that my mission pretty much always, he says.
I snuggle up against him. Well, it's working. I turn my head and pat the edge of the couch where a purple throw blanket covers the cushions. Is this for when you get cold at night while you're reading?
Yes, and it's for napping,
he says, his cheeks a touch pink. I nudge his shoulder. Why are you embarrassed to say you nap?
I don't know. It seems so young, or perhaps so old, but I do love a good catnap on a Sunday afternoon.
I hum, getting lost in that delicious idea. We should take a nap today, I purr, seducing him into the plan.
That would really make it a perfect day. Sex and love and you and a catnap.
Let's make it a deliberate date to sleep. But not yet. I pop up from the couch. Can I see more of your place? Then I pause as a worry pokes at me. Am I pushing? Is it too much to want a tour of his flat? I'm sorry, I don't mean to pry. I flap a hand at his abode. It's your life, and I get it that it may be personal. His expression softens.
Are you asking if I lived here with Violet?
I glance away, heat flushing my neck, and nod. I didn't think about that at all when I walked in here an hour ago. I was just so focused on getting him naked, getting me naked. But now it's on my mind.
Yes, I did. I've lived here for 10 years,
he says, and I do the math easily. That's the last 4 years, plus half of their marriage. Standing, he runs his fingers along my hair, brushing it away from my cheek, watching my face with concern and curiosity.
But are you asking me if it's weird for me to have you here? Or are you telling me you feel uncomfortable being here? Because if you do, just say the word and we can leave. We can go to your flat. Or, if you just want to leave.
His voice pitches up with a tension I don't usually hear in it, like it pains him, the thought of me leaving. It definitely pains me. And of course he'd be nervous about me being here in his space. I'm the first person he's been with in 4 years. My heart screams in protest at the prospect of leaving. It doesn't bother me.
Are you sure?
I glance around. His flat doesn't feel like a mausoleum. It feels like his. On the coffee table sits a program from last night's production of And So It Begins, his brother's play that we saw together. Next to it is a new book we picked out for our book club. Near the corner is his camera, the one he uses when he takes photos of London. Photos with me, and sometimes photos with me and him in them together. It's all very Heath. I'm sure, I say.
I don't want you to be uncomfortable, he presses. But this is my home. It's where I live. It's where I went after the night I met you. I came through that door,
he points to the entrance,
still thinking about you, how you felt naked in my arms.
He pulls me closer onto the couch.
This couch is where I was the next night when I rang to ask you to dinner.
He waves to the kitchen. Teacups line the counter. A yellow kettle sits next to the stove.
That is where I was when I called you after your first day at work, hunting for an excuse to talk to you.
He cups my face, then runs his fingers through my hair.
You're everywhere.
He taps his chest.
Because you were in here.
I feel like a fool. Emotions rise, clogging my throat. I'm not sure I'll have room inside for all these things I feel for him. I shift around so I can loop my hands around his neck, play with the ends of his hair. Will you show me the pictures on your mantle?
Of course. I'm an open book with you.
He takes my hands and takes me there. I pick up a framed photo by the edge, a shot of Heath and Jude and two people who are clearly his parents. It's you and your family, I say, of the picture of them at the dinner table, wearing Christmas paper crowns, holding Christmas crackers. I bet there's a fireplace and hot mulled cider nearby. He just grins and shrugs out a yes. I think I love your family already. I pick up another shot, Heath and Jude, outside a theater.
That's a play he did here, Pillow Talk, his breakout show, he says.
Has he ever performed on or off Broadway?
Not yet. I wanted to take him to see some plays when I was in New York for a long weekend a few years ago, but he was shooting a BBC show.
My eyes whiten. You were in New York? I could have bumped into you.
Wouldn't that have been a bit of kismet?
He asks. It would. I can see it now, I say. You and me meeting a few years ago. And I truly can. Him and me in Manhattan, checking out restaurants, going to shows, kicking around the park, taking pictures on Bethesda Terrace. I want to ask whether he wants to go to New York with me, if he'll take a trip, meet my friends, do it all up. But it does feel a little too soon. I'll hold the idea close and ask him eventually. I find a shot of Heath and the man from the store playing chess in the park, Heath's face intense as the other man lifts a knight. Nigel, I say. But who took this photo? He gestures to another image, one of a dark-haired man with his arm wrapped around a lovely redhead.
That's my friend Griffin. He was in town for a few months, and he took that shot of Nigel and me in Battersea Park. Griffin runs tours in Paris. He's English, but he speaks five languages. Sometimes I take photos for him of places around the city because he's been working to expand those tours here.
I clutch the photo to my chest. I love it. It almost makes it seem like you like people, I tease.
Some people, he says.
I set it back down as the light from the window casts its rays on a picture behind the one of his friends. It's an image of Heath and a woman. She's tall, with intelligent eyes and dark blonde hair. They're standing by the river, and his arm is looped around her shoulders. Violet. A pang digs into my heart, but it's not jealousy. It's sadness for what he's been through and for how hard it must have been to lose her. On the one hand, I'm only here with him because she's not, but that's such a black and white way to view the situation. Life happens, and you have to go forward. Allow your grief to run its course until you eventually reach a place of acceptance, and then you start healing. I know that all too well. It's a lovely photo, I say softly, respectfully too.
Thank you, he says.
That's all, and I suppose it's all that needs to be said. It's the only photo of her. This mantle isn't a violet shrine. It's not a monument to his past love. It's simply a place for pictures of the people in his world. It's the stories of the years, of the things he's done, of those who matter to him. An empty gold frame stands at the end. And that? Heath dips his head, looking sheepish. Come on, what's that for? I ask, giving him a gentle bump of the shoulder.
Look, if you came into my home and I had a photo of you already, I would look like a stalker.
Are you saying you removed a photo of me from it? I tease. He laughs, tossing his head back.
That would make me very odd.
I give him an I'm waiting stare. So?
I could see you and me in there. Maybe that shot from the gardens. Maybe on a bridge. Perhaps we could take pictures of us kissing all over London, and I could have a shelf of kissing photos instead of books. My heart soars at that image, or rather, all the images. You would take pictures of us kissing? A smile curves his lips.
I would. I want to.
Then you should. I lift my chin. Consider me your willing subject. There's nothing to do then but to kiss. It's imperative. Then kissing leads to the bedroom, where clothes come off once again, and then we're tangled up, bodies pressing, hearts connecting, sealing this promise to kiss all over the city. The kisses turn hotter, hungrier, and then I'm under him, and he covers me. This is where I want to be, feeling his glorious weight as he presses into me. As he moves in me, I drag my nails down his back, making him shudder. I register that detail. He likes being marked. Maybe it makes him feel more connected to me. A little bite, a little scratch, a tug, a pull. Wrapping a hand around the back of his head, I drag his mouth to mine and kiss him ferociously as he takes me over the edge again. Hands, nails, words, cries, and promises. Promises to look out for each other. To love one another. After, we lie together, wrapped up in the sheets. I don't want this day to end. When it does and morning comes, I'll have to go back to work. Work. The thing that makes this complicated. As the sun starts to dip in the sky, I broach the subject. What happens tomorrow when we go into the office? And we're still colleagues. We're still competing for a job.
I don't know, but we need to figure it out soon,
he says a little heavily. Correction, a lot heavily. But what does that mean? I ask. How do we sort it out? You mean just living with whoever she chooses for the promotion?
I suppose.
My shoulders sink as I voice the thing that worries me. Well, one of many things. I don't like competing with you, Heath.
I don't love it either. But why do you dislike it?
I prop my head in my hand. I just want to be with you. I don't want to have this thing between us. And I don't want to feel like if you get the job, I'm second best. Or if I get it, and you're the one who feels bad, I don't want it to create any weirdness between us. I almost wish I could just... I trail off, unsure if I should say what's truly on my mind. Heath has always been good at reading me, though.
Just what? Just take your name out of the hat.
That's part of it, in a way. I had considered that recently. Sort of, even though I don't want to do that either. I must be confusing him. Hell, I'm confusing me. I like competition, but I want to compete with other houses. I want to compete with other people in the field who I should compete with. I don't want to vie with you. That's not my kink, I say, pushing out a light laugh. He laughs too.
Sure, it might work for others, but it's not for you.
Or you?
He shrugs. I think you know me well enough to have figured out I simply prefer working alone.
I press my forehead to his. Tell me again why you don't work in a library.
Libraries still have people, he says dryly. Occupational hazard.
You need a den in a country home, with a window overlooking a pond that has ducks, I say. A soft chuckle falls from his lips.
Pretty sure I'd sign up right now for a life of happily feeding the ducks every morning.
Then his smile fades away.
But I know what you're saying, Joe. You don't want complications.
Maybe that makes me selfish. Or foolish. I don't know. I just want to do the job I love and be with the man I love.
Whoa. Holy big love confession.
I mean, sure, I told him already. But saying it in a conversation feels like leveling up. Did I just go too big? But his strong hand stroking my hair tells me he's all in, too.
I want the same. And I wish I had an answer to the job issue, but I don't.
My brow knits as a thought springs out of nowhere. Do we have to disclose that we're involved? Is there a policy?
He nods. I believe so, but it wouldn't change anything. Since we're not direct reports, there's no rule against it as co-workers. We won't even be direct reports if one of us is VP, because we all technically report to Emily.
So why do I feel so unsettled, like I don't quite fit in my skin? Maybe because work has always been my domain, my passion. I haven't ever shared it with a man, haven't needed to, and I don't know how to navigate this new space. When do you want to tell her? I ask. Then I hold my breath, hoping he doesn't say tomorrow. While this burgeoning romance doesn't feel fragile, it does feel like ours alone. I don't want to bring it out in the open on Monday morning, especially during a high-pressure week as we prep for the auction. Before he can speak, I answer my own question. How about next week, when the auction is over?
Perfect,
he says. My forehead creases with another worry. Until then, and honestly, after then, too, how do we act toward each other, Heath? Like we're not...
Like you're not my girlfriend?
He says, teasing. I roll my eyes. You don't seem like a boyfriend.
What am I? Your lover?
He says, all 70s porn star. I slug his arm. No, you just seem like mine, okay? Stop making fun of me.
I'm not poking fun at you.
He laughs, then his smile turns kind, and he kisses my head.
Okay, maybe I am a little bit. I told you I want to be yours. That's all I want, Joe.
Then he taps his chin, humming.
Well, the other thing I want is to beat you at darts.
We'll see if you can, I challenge. That night, he destroys me at darts in a pub around the corner. Then he takes a picture of us kissing in front of the dartboard. On the way to my place, he smooches me in Neil's yard and snaps that shot, too. Then he spends the night with me at my flat, leaving early in the morning. We go into work separately, and something about that feels a little bit wrong.
Chapter 20. Heath. The auction kicks off tomorrow night. It's Thursday, and we're working late, putting the finishing touches on an impressive collection of modern art. On the fifth floor, in the auction room itself, the chairs are arranged, the lectern is set up, and the lots have been prepared. All the marketing, all the outreach, all the artist contact is complete. We've posted exclusive video tours of artist studios online and on YouTube during the last week. We're donating a portion of the proceeds to some of the artists' favorite charities, and we've corralled works from emerging talent to offer alongside art from well-known artists. Jo is a firecracker, and her whirlwind energy has lit a match under the marketing for this auction. Emily stands with her arms crossed, looking pleased as a lion after a meal on the Serengeti. Sandy sits on the edge of the raised stage, kicking her heel.
Attendance is 10% higher than at our last auction,
Emily coos, then shakes her head in admiration as Freddy straightens the lectern.
Because we're rock stars,
he shouts, then gestures to his neckwear, decorated with illustrations of guitars.
Which is why I picked this bow tie for auction eve.
You are rock stars indeed, all of you,
Emily says, pointing to the main team members, Joe, Rhea, Freddy, and myself.
And our newest team member, too.
She stays on Joe the longest. And it seems Joe deserves most of the credit. Her ideas ignited the buzz. She's driving the attendance uptick with her strategy. In the past, I'd have been rankled to see that. My ego might have felt bruised. Now, though, I'm proud of her. Wildly proud. She certainly seems the most likely candidate for the promotion. Perhaps that would solve everything. Then Emily turns to me.
But none of this would be possible without someone like you. Your depth of knowledge in the London art world, your contacts, your artist outreach are all second to none.
Thank you, I say quietly. Inside, I'm enjoying the praise. Mostly. I've spent years honing those skills. It's good to see Emily recognize them. And yet the compliment makes me feel a little uncomfortable, like I don't quite want to take it.
And don't forget, Monday is a bank holiday, so don't do something to impress me, like send me emails or proposals, since I'll be taking the day off too,
she says with a cheeky grin. She knows most of us are workaholics and would do just that.
I shall restrain myself from hitting the send button over the 3-day weekend,
Rhea says. When the prep work ends and we make our way to leave, Emily sets one hand on my shoulder and another on Joe's.
You make choosing the right candidate for the promotion very hard, you know. That's a good position for you to be in, then,
says Joe, ever the diplomat. Sandy sails by, a smile on her lips. She mimes zipping them. Emily laughs.
Sandy,
she says, chiding but a little delighted too, like they know what our fate is, and that maybe it's not a hard decision at all. Maybe for them it's not. But this isn't a good position for us, not for Joe and me. Later that night, when I shut the door behind me at Joe's flat, she sets a hand on my chest.
I don't want to talk about work.
Fair enough. We don't talk much at all. Instead, I undress her and kiss her everywhere, at last settling between her legs, where I spend a good long time using my mouth for much better things than talking. A few orgasms later, she's spent and glowing. That's how I want to see her, in bed and blissed out, across the table and animated, by my side as we walk through the city, in the shower with me in the morning, falling asleep with me at night. The question is, how to get there? But I'm starting to see the answer, and it might be an answer to more than one question.
Chapter 21. Joe. As I apply my mascara the next evening, Emerson asks, "Are you nervous?" I let my gaze stray from the mirror, meeting her eyes through FaceTime on my phone as I get ready. Terrified. Like, I'll need 3 applications of deodorant because I'm going to sweat all night tonight, and not the good kind of sweat. She gives me a sympathetic frown as she power walks through Central Park, sunglasses on, the noontime rays lighting her face. Are you a sweat monster? How did I not know this about you? I just sweat when I get nervous, and the first night of an auction in my new job is one hell of a recipe for worry. I gesture to my pink bra, which is why I haven't put my blouse on yet. That'll be a last-minute thing. Ah, and this whole time I thought you were just trying to be sexy for moi, she quips as she rounds the reservoir. But seriously, it's going to be great. I'm proud of you and your boss will love it. But, I return to the mascara, answering her, but what? Do you still want the promotion? As I apply the finishing touches, I answer her,